Okay, so the plan for tonight is we have three couples. The Schultzes, actually, everyone driving back from Texas got sick, really sick, which is what happens when you go to Texas. And so take that, and just live by that. So they're not going to be here tonight. So we've only got three couples sharing. I just want to remind you, as we've talked through the last couple of weeks, in terms of what God has called us to, both in marriage and in raising children, we've talked very theoretically, and we've gotten into some frameworks around how to begin to live these things out, and kind of the two main themes, and actually the couples that we picked for tonight were along the lines of these two themes. One, what are daily, weekly, annual rhythms that you can implement in your marriage, you can implement with your children? And then what are also like one-off plantings, these significant moments that carry weight beyond just the singular moment. Most of these couples are going to be representing to us kind of stories and rhythms that they've implemented as a family. And we've asked them to share why they did it, asked them to share what exactly they do as practically as they can, and then to the effects of that, how they've seen fruit from it, and then all to kind of leave room at the end of each one of the three to answer questions, any questions you might have. If you guys are answering questions, if you could repeat the question that comes towards you. And then we're going to send out homework tomorrow based on the last 3 weeks for us to try as a church. So let me pray for us and we'll begin. So Father, I'm humbled tonight. To consider again the realities that your grand purpose is for the world, to flood the earth with your glory, your renown, to see all the nations submitted to King Jesus, to see truth and beauty and goodness flourish everywhere. That mission at its most basic level has to do with everyday things like eating meals together as a family and moving towards one another in our marriage and asking hard questions and dealing with just the everyday nitty-gritty of life. And in the end, those sweeping and glorious purposes come down to our marriages and how we raise our kids. And so God, I pray that you'd make us faithful and diligent. I pray that we would learn tonight. Maybe one thing to take away, to try on as a family, to try on as couples, to try on with our kids. And that God, you'd continue to build us up as a church as we seek to faithfully follow you, faithfully cultivate marriages that put on display the gospel of Jesus, and to raise children to be disciples of Jesus. In your name we pray, amen. So this is Riley and Katie Flynn.
Hi.
So I'm Riley, and this is my wife, Katie.
Hi.
I'll give you an overview and then we'll get into the practical stuff pretty quickly. But, a year or so into our marriage, figured out that we were kind of getting overrun by responsibilities and just the day-to-day things you have to deal with in your marriage. Whether it's calendar or scheduling or budget or any of those things. And they were totally swamping a lot of the other time that we would have. And so we decided that we were going to do some things to be a little bit more intentional about that. And so one of the things that we implemented, and we'll talk about a few, but we implemented an annual, what I call the Flynn Family Retreat. And the name has stuck, but Katie really doesn't like it. But we basically said we want a time where we get away, where we have a conversation about some key things, and we'll tell you the format of how we do that. And then we also implemented, that was kind of our macro strategy time, kind of overview time. But then we also said, hey, we need regular maintenance time as well. And so we have some things we do weekly and monthly, as well. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about.
And just to add to that, I think our retreat kind of came out of this realization. At the time, we were both in grad school and working, and so we had a lot of other commitments, and it wasn't like we got home from class at 10 p.m. or something, and it wasn't like we were just having the conversation, how's your soul, tonight. It was like, okay, I'm getting up at 6, and I have all this homework, and So we kind of realized like some of the things that we were really called to in caring for one another weren't just happening out of the blue. We really had to structure the time, which I completely resisted at the beginning because I just felt like, oh, we're newlyweds. Like we should just be caring for each other naturally without having to put time on the calendar. And then I think a year in realizing, okay, I had to submit to putting time on the calendar, which was hard for me, but it has been really fruit bearing. And I think now a lot of those conversations that we scheduled at the beginning have been able to be more natural because we were so intentional at the start.
So on an annual basis, we try and get away for 2 nights is kind of the ideal scenario. And it's important that we get away. I put together an agenda, and, you know, it's roughly structured like, here's what we'll talk about, and here's when we'll talk about it. So there's even, like, a schedule for the time. And then when we get there, it's like a business meeting. We try and stay on track, and we do all this stuff. But within that, We do a retro of the year, the previous year, and kind of go, hey, how did it go? And then we do kind of some forward thinking and planning, things we'd change, that kind of thing. And so the key things that I would say is I don't think it really needs to be this exact thing, and it's changed over time for us, but I think what is helpful is having a plan, making an agenda, and actually sticking to it. And I do think it's really helpful to have that. We do try and have some fun along the way, but that's kind of how we do it. So the topics that we go through every single year are personal health. So we kind of go, hey, how are you doing spiritually? Like, how's your soul? How are you doing physically? And it just gives us, again, these are things that we probably know the answers to, but it gives us a chance to at a really high level go, do you have any particular goals this year along with your spiritual health or your physical health? We talk about marital health, and that's both communication, but it's also our physical, how's our sex life, and then how's our non-sex but still intimacy level. We talk about now our family health, which, you know, our oldest is 3.5, so this was not a part of it when we started, but it's something. And we actually, I think long-term, it's our hope that our kids would participate in this. It's been really fruitful to our marriage. I think there will always be parts of it that are just for Katie and I to do together. But I think it has been, it is something that we aspire to incorporate our kids into. And then as we go, that sets the baseline. Like, how are we doing? What do we want to do? And then we talk about the things that we have, primarily our time and our money. And we kind of do calendaring both at a kind of annual basis. Like, do we need a second retreat for some reason, or do we need personal prayer retreats, or do we need, family vacation? Like, some years it's been like, you know, we have way too many weddings on the calendar already or whatever, but we go through all that. And then we talk about our budget, which is always fun, but we lay the foundation with health, what our goals for health are, where we are with health, and then we can talk about how we want to live out into our time and our money. And that's kind of, you know, sometimes, you know, as we've played with rule of life stuff and rhythms of life, we've talked about creativity and what gives us joy and, you know, all that, but those kind of come and go. But yeah, generally, that's kind of high level how we spend the time. And I mean, it really is. Oh yeah. And the other thing I want to say is, so then when we have a section, it might be a few hours that we'll spend on one particular part. We always open up with a very open-ended prayer time. So it could be, and I mean, it could be 30 minutes, which for us would be a lot. I'm sure some of you people are a lot holier and you pray for hours about any particular thing, but we'll say like, all right, we're praying about our marital health, and we'll open in prayer, just asking God to come and kind of inform the conversation that we're about to have. So even though it has a very structured kind of deal, and so that that'll be like a half day. And then we'll have so that's why it's usually two nights so that we have the time to kind of go through all that.
Okay. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about kind of how this manifests itself the rest of the year, because the retreat, you know, is just one select time. And really what we started with was a friend of ours sent us some questions that we started doing every week. Well, it probably ended up being more like three times a month. And that kind of morphed into the agenda for the retreat. And we're not doing these five questions anymore, so that's full disclosure. But they started like back in the same time with what brought you joy this week? What was something that was hard this week? How can I pray for you this week? What is one specific thing I can do for you this week? Or, you know, what's one way I can serve you? And then is there any unconfessed sin, unresolved hurt, or conflict that we need to share and seek forgiveness for? So we try to do these five questions every week, and a lot of weeks we would kind of stop on one because there was something we had to talk about, and then, you know, we would run out of time. And then once a month, there were two additional questions. How's our physical relationship, and are we stewarding our finance as well? So that kind of led into, you know, like you can see the overlap, but we started there, and then over time, just as different things have come up in our lives and different responsibilities, different seasons with kids, et cetera, our time that we've structured every week has really changed. So we are now doing what we call our business meeting once a month. So, or once a week, which is super practical, like schedule for the week, like making sure we have our nanny when both of us have travel or, you know, whatever, like really logistical. We talk about any investments we're making. We do a lot of like business related stuff together. So that kind of fits into that meeting. What other topics?
It could be something as simple as what the upcoming calendar items are for the week or next week or whatever. I mean, it's pretty.
And sometimes we table other conversations like, where's our kid going to go to school, like for that meeting, so that it doesn't creep into date night. So then we also are trying to do a date every week. And these things probably, again, happen like 2 to 4 times a month, but we try to schedule it weekly so that when stuff comes up or something happens, you know, it's on the calendar for the next week if it doesn't happen. So we have the first thing we're doing now is the business meeting. The second thing is we're scheduling, and this is like embarrassing for me to even say, but we're scheduling downtime. So like making sure we have nights at home where we have nothing that's planned, just because we know that our kids need that. And then that also gives us time to kind of hang out and like some of those five question topics, like we'll address like just when we get to hang out after our kids go to bed. And then I think the third thing is just a date night. So we really try to schedule our business meeting before that so that we're not talking about all the things that are really practical and pressing, like, and we just have that time, the two of us, to get away. And like, we'll schedule date night, like even at home if we aren't getting a sitter or whatever, but we try to, have like no agenda for that time and just hang out. And so I think those are the rhythms that we're implementing now to keep that like cadence going throughout the year. But I think I said this before, but I think once you have the intentionality of like those five questions or things that you're checking in on all the time, like how's your soul, you know, it gets a little bit more natural to discuss. Like for us, never once came up in conversation how's our budget, like naturally. It wasn't like, oh, we're driving to class, like how did we do, you know, it was like, or like did we overspend, or like do we have random money somewhere, like, you know. So I think once we started talking about it, it's been easier.
Random money somewhere would be nice.
I don't know.
I think like the overarching theme, you know, and the thing that we've seen be really useful in our marriage is take time, make buckets of time to do all the different things. So have high level kind of, you know, strategy time, and then have tactical and maintenance time. And you know, that has borne a tremendous amount of fruit in our lives. So
we're ready for the toughest questions you can throw at us. Well, we have one in school And, you know, she's going 3 mornings a week, so it was a pretty big decision that consisted of what had availability and was close to our house. ACA. We'll get back to you on that in a couple of years.
So the question was, how do you incorporate other people into that? I think so there's, I'll take a shot and then you see, but, so I think that we have community or people that we're trying to build relationships with, whether that be the Shuffles or the Browns or whoever, who are like really good friends. And we'll say like, man, it's been too long. You know, it'll just, as we talk about our calendar, we talk about things, inevitably it'll be like, it's just the trade-offs of how do we prioritize how we're spending our time and who we're spending time with. It's not, you know, usually what happens at the annual retreat time is like, who are like, we don't have that many friends. Like, you know, it's like usually like a, like, or why haven't we spent more time with these people or why haven't, you know, whatever. And so I think, I don't know, but then there's other people that we, you know, there's the more business side of the people we incorporate in, it's more natural. And we might use that weekly business meeting time to go talk to a financial planner or whatever, you know, so those are other people. It's maybe not the way you wanted to go with it, but that, you know, it gives us a slot in the week that you can fill in with things like that, or, you know, contractor for work or for work on the house or whatever.
Is the question more like, how do we bring people into our decision making, or how do we like hang out with other people? Yeah, we don't have that. But I think, you know, it's something that we're open to, like something we've been praying for in specific areas, especially like parenting, or, you know, I think it's probably hard to imagine someone who's going to like oversee all of those things. But I think, you know, we have a couple of friends like outside the state that we're more open with on like budget stuff and kind of like business related stuff that we invite them into. And then I think, yeah, we want to continue to be open. But I think like having the alignment here helps us like go out from that place. So it's evolving, but we don't have a good answer right now.
I mean, I think when big things have come up, we have brought it to our friends naturally. And I think also like the rhythm of we're intentional about talking about these things does kind of radiate out. It's like we have a rhythm of doing that. And so it's easier to invite a close friend into that. But we're not great at it. So the question is, how do you keep consistency? What's the accountability structure there? Well, you should answer first.
I think there's different seasons where like one of us has had to take more of the lead on that. So I think it's a lot of grace, like not saying, oh, this is one person's job. You know, Riley's naturally better at scheduling. So like if he doesn't schedule it, doesn't always happen. But I think like having grace for each other, that it's like we both have to be thinking about these things and bringing them up. And I think usually it becomes really obvious when there's been a void of some of that time and it like is a fight, and then we're like, oh, okay, we're kind of off track. And so tips on following through,
I think
tactics.
It's also like,
I don't know.
No, I think one of the things, what's been awesome is because we have the annual time, we're never going to, like, we might go a whole year on something, not doing something well or whatever, or we totally forgot, but I basically just take the agenda from the previous meeting, copy and paste it, and then change it, you know, for the next year. And so because we've now been doing this since 2011, you know, we have 7 agendas, eight almost, you know, but, so the point is, I think what we've learned is we had times where we were going, we have to have 4 business meetings a month, you know, and then we would always feel like we were behind or whatever. And it was it was kind of, hey, we need to do this twice a month, you know, so let's put it on the calendar every week, and there are going to be weeks where it has to get bumped, but then you know, or whatever. And so I think some of it too is just the expectation up front and giving yourself the flexibility. And so because we had the time at one of our annual retreats to reflect on why do we feel like this isn't working, we could come up with a solution and solve it.
And like sometimes like the business meeting is like a 30-minute call, like on a drive or, you know, one of us commuting or something. Like it doesn't have to be super like perfect every time. It's just like, hey, we have a few things we need to check off the list. Like, when can you talk to me?
But there's also a reward to it, which is like date nights free of those conversations. You know, other time is free of those conversations. And so there's not this like cloud hanging. So we know like, hey, if we actually are diligent about this time, we get the reward of the other time being free. And then there's I believe if we're having a business meeting or we're like going on our retreat, like we'll try and do something that's like fun, you know, or we'll get a pastry at the coffee shop or like, you know, it's like
escape room.
Well, yeah. That was, yeah.
Who's next? No. I mean, a lot of this came from the question was, are there any book suggestions? And the answer is no. I don't think we read any books that led us to these conclusions. A lot of it came from conversations with friends. Like someone in premarital sent us those original 5 questions, kind of morphed, you know, you're getting like 9 years of trial and error basically in 15 minutes. So, I mean, we've made a lot of changes as time's gone on, and like, this is what has worked for us, but it'll probably look really different in 5 years. And I think it'll, you know, look different for every family based on what you guys have going on. But
there's a book called Getting Things Done.
I mean, I never read it.
You know, there's a bunch of business like kind of books that we both have MBAs, and I'm kind of like a productivity freak, and so I like all that stuff, and so that seeps in. But in terms of the like root theology, I would say it's more from friendships and mentors and things over the years than it is from any particular book.
No.
Just kidding.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, I'm Ty.
And I'm Kaylin.
And we're Ty and Kaylin Wilson.
Woo! I wanted to start by saying we were asked to talk about some routines we've established kind of in our family, which family meeting is one of those things. But as Ty and I were kind of talking through what to say, I was thinking about things that have been really helpful to us over 18 years of having kids. And so we kind of went a little bit further than just family meeting. I know, it'll be quick. And talked about some things of like who we are, what we do, what we say, which family meeting has been an integral part of that, creating space for that identity and how we do things. But we kind of went, that's a more recent thing for us in the last couple of years. And so we went a little bit further back to kind of look at how do we do things when our kids were really little. So we're going to share some of those things.
Yeah, so one of the ways that we work is Kaylin reads books, and then she tells me about them, and then I adopt them.
I just tell them what to do. I read the book and say, here's what we're going to do. Yeah.
Or it works like that. So I remember she read a book a while back, and I, of course, I don't know which one it was because I didn't read it, but the gist of it was talking about the identity of the Jewish people and how that everything about being Jewish in the Old Testament was about their identity and about distinguishing themselves as a people and as God's people. And that really resonated with me. And part of what resonated with me was how much we don't do any of that today in our culture. Like, our sense of identity and our sense of belonging is like we both root for the Broncos. And so, like, we're like buddies or something. But there's there's not a sense of community or a larger sense of being one people. And so I think from a while back, at least, trying to establish a family identity became important for us. And then within that context, trying to say, like, hey, what does it mean to be a believer? What is our identity as Christ followers? So a lot of this stuff, I think, is really about that and driven from that effort. And so when you start talking about things like, okay, well, what is your identity? Well, it really comes down to, like, well, what do you believe and what do? And what do you say? And so just thinking about that as a framework, some of the things that we did. So around, if you take the, what do you say, as a category, like we always were, from an early age, tried to teach our kids how to communicate what they feel to one another and to do that directly. And so one example of that is for birthdays, we always have our kids go around and we'll say to one kid, we'll say, like, hey, this is something that I really like about you. And all the kids do it, and they stare at them in the eye and, like, tell them what they think of them or what they appreciate about them. We've always been really firm on not allowing, hateful words. So, like, in our house, if you're going to fight, I would just assume you throw a punch, right? Like, those words and the bickering and things like that. Like, we really, really shut that down hard. And so, like, the whole idea of is it better to be right than to be kind? Which one do you want? Do you want to really be right here, or would you rather be kind? Which one? What are you after? And so, some of our rules that we have are around that. So, like, we first time obedience.
Yeah, when our kids were really little, we had 3 rules in our house, and we added a 4th. But our 3 rules always, and everything fell under these 3 things: a right response, first time obedience, and be kind. And I felt like we could parent all of our scenarios under those 3 things. And the 4th one we added was have fun. Because we wanted, that was a part of our identity. We wanted to be a space that was always fun, that life was lived and enjoyed. And so that became a constant part of our rhetoric in what we said with our kids and really what we implemented with our kids. Right response, first time obedience, and be kind, and then have fun. And I would say, too, when our kids were pretty young, we decided that we wanted to do a catechism with our kids, this idea of identity, and that we had a shared language in that identity. And so we took, I don't know, we probably took over a couple months when we would do like a date night or do something, the two of us, we used Westminster. I mean, we used a bunch of different resources, but we kind of wrote, we called it the Wilson Catechism, and wrote our own catechism so that when we would say to our kids, you know, we were able to ask them a question and we all had the same response to that question. So we would do it at dinner. We would repeat the questions over and over at dinner and in different spaces. And we gave rewards for kids that memorized it all. And yeah, so I'm trying to think. Hold on.
Yeah, so I think carrying on from that, like we read some books, or I shouldn't say that. Kaylin read some books and told me about them. I didn't read any books, so let's be clear about that. But one of them she brought, I want to mention, that. Did you? Is it up here?
I left it there, but.
So it's absolutely a terrible title, and if you're listening, author, I hope you know your title's terrible. I don't like it. Some other people may love it, but it's The Secret of Happy Families. So by Bruce Feiler, something like this. I didn't read it, but this book is awesome. So one of the things in there is this author, and I'm not going to go into the details of the book, but you should read it or have your spouse read it to you or tell you about it. One of the things that he went into was the idea of like having like a family like mission statement or like an identity statement. And so we did that and spent several weeks meeting with our kids and talking about our identity and who we are and trying to come up with like an identity statement and a purpose statement and some of those things. And I would struggle to even tell you some of the details of those things, but the process was amazing. And being able to sit with our kids, and obviously that's harder to do with a three-year-old, but the general principle of like, hey, what are we about and what are we going to try to accomplish? Like, I mean, you heard Riley talk about a lot of business terms, but that was a lot of the premise of this book was he went and studied different businesses and said, hey, or people that create great dynamic functional teams and said, what are they doing that we could bring into a family? So it was pretty good.
So in that process with our kids, I just wanted to say it was really funny because we spent one section talking about what are things we say all the time, just and asked our kids, like, because it was good to hear from them, like, what do they constantly hear? What are we saying? And when our youngest is constantly lost and away from the rest of us, and I think it was unanimously, they all said, where's Presley? That's what we say all the time. We go to some place, all of us together, and everybody's like, hey, wait, where's Presley? But and that process was really good, too, like Ty said, with older kids, because it was interesting that we could sit and say, here are all the things that we really value. Here are all the things that are really important to us. And then sitting with our kids and saying, hey, what do we value? And there were several things that they never said. And that I would have said, oh, this is a really high priority to us. And so it kind of keyed in on some things that like, hey, maybe we do this all the time, but maybe only Ty and I know about this. And it needs to be something that we're all aware. Generosity is
one. Yeah, our kids had no idea that we give money away.
Yeah, it just had never been.
It's a big priority for us. Like, we're constantly looking for places to give money. And so take that with a grain of salt, all of you mongers. But anyway, our kids had no idea that that was even important to us.
So. Yeah. Yes. And the other thing that came out of that book, and the reason that we're even asked to talk, which we're finally getting to, is family meetings. So we established a weekly family meeting. And when we do it Sunday nights, and we do it every Sunday night, and we try to do it either around a dinner table or, you know, sitting around, but there have definitely been times that we do it all sitting on the landing at the top of the stairs. And our family meeting last night was in the car on the way home from friend's house. So we always do it, but it can look different each time. And we have two questions that we always ask: what's working, what's not working? And everybody has a say. Everybody gets to communicate what they feel like is functioning well in our house, what they feel like they would like to see different. It's a good space for kids to be able to express just needs maybe that they feel like aren't being met. And we've added to that happy, crappy, happy, which one of our girls refuses to say crappy. So, but you say from the last week, it's two good things and one bad thing. And so everybody goes around and says that on Sunday nights too. What else about family meeting?
One of the things I would say just in the sense of community or identity is, the more you can have traditions, whatever they are, do them consistently for a long period of time. So an example of this, I don't necessarily like Chinese food. We typically have Chinese food with our family meeting. If we're at home, we run out and pick up some Chinese food, and our kids know that. That's what they're expecting for family meeting, unless we're driving home from some friend's house or something. But you know, small things of creating a rhythm, creating consistency, those traditions around holidays are great parts of identities for all of us. And we could all sit and talk about like, hey, how did you celebrate Christmas when you were growing up? Did you open a present here? Or did you go to this person's house? Or what? There's these consistent things that make us who we are. and trying to shape that as a family was is important to us.
Yeah, and that reminds me, one of the other things that we put on the list from the time that our kids were really little, we were very intentional about finding spaces that we all did together. So our kids did swim team, and we were all swim or no one swims, and it was what we did together. And part of that, you create spaces where your kids root for each other, and that creates this camaraderie between them. It's just been a really beneficial thing. The other thing is we had no money, but we like decided we're going to ski. And we're going to put our kids in lessons, and we're going to do this, and it's going to be something that we're going to do together as a family. And there were a couple things about that decision. It wasn't just, hey, this is what we do together. We cheer for each other. Everybody watches everybody go off that jump, you know, whatever it is. But we also wanted to have spaces, you know, as your kids become teenagers, they tend to gravitate towards, I'm going to spend the weekends with my friends, which is all great. But we wanted to have something that was like a really great thing that we participate in that wasn't a drag away from that social, but something that they wanted to participate in.
And they could bring their friends.
And they could bring their friends into that space. And so we really looked for things that the six of us did together.
Yeah. So another thing I would add is like, it, especially under the umbrella of like, hey, this is who we are. This is our identity. Like, don't shy away from that. And that can come in hard things too. Like we said, hey, you know what? Part of who we are is we don't do sleepovers. And that has never been very popular, but that's something that we've been pretty consistent on. We've made some concessions for, family and a few things like that, so it's not like this completely asinine rigid rule, but it's part of who we are, and our kids know, like, I can't probably ask for that, like, that's not going to work. So you can also have part of your identity around rules and structures and discipline and different things like that too.
I want to say this about sleepovers, just to give like some context to it, but there were lots of different reasons that we made that decision. But one thing, when your kids come and say, can I stay at so-and-so's house? And if you're uncomfortable with so-and-so's house, putting your kids in a position where it's like, my parents won't let me come to your house, but they could go stay at this person's house. There was just a benefit to like removing the option. So that I didn't ever have my kids in this position that they had to communicate to someone, my parents don't like your family or your friends. Oh, my parents do like your, you know, it just, there were lots of other reasons, but that was one thing that I think was kind of good. My kids didn't even know that that was part of the process and why we removed it. But I remember as a kid, I knew the houses I could go to and I knew the houses I couldn't go to. And I didn't have enough discretion as a 12-year-old to not tell those friends that. And that just, anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's largely, you know, it's fear and control based, right? Like, I just know what I was doing at sleepovers. Didn't want my kids doing the same thing.
Traditionally, my parents have come to keep my kids. And then we've done some where we farm our kids out to family, friends. But almost all of those situations, it's not a house with one of their friends. It's, if that makes sense, it's, you know, Callie and Hunter. We have some friends that have two little babies, but one of my kids can stay at their house. So I think that's our list. Oh, yeah, we do. If it's family, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying you have to do that.
We probably shouldn't have brought up sleepovers because now that's going to become like
sorry.
Key point. But
I feel like early on all of this worked really well and now none of it works.
Now that we have four teenagers. We want to share wisdom from way earlier in our parenting. Not so much today.
No, yeah, it's definitely has shifted, and certainly You know, as our kids have become teenagers, the ground feels less solid on a lot of our decisions. And so I would say there's a lot more give and take, than there used to be. How would you characterize some of those changes?
Well, I would say this. Like, I think the things that we established when they were really young, as much as we're laughing about shaky ground now, have really established, I would say, pretty solid ground of my kid. We know who we are. They know who they are. They're going to choose whether or not they want to be that person right now, and that decision is more on them. You know, one of the books I read when our kids were really little talked about that as parents, you are your child's moral compass until they're of an age that they can morally choose what's right or wrong. And so you, when your kids are really little, you have this responsibility of forcing them to choose the right thing because that moral compass lies with you. And then there's this transition that begins to happen where you have to let them make, it's not on you anymore. It's on them to make that decision. And that, I mean, that's all, those are tough areas, you know, and as your kids get older, trying to like step back and say, we've always done things this way, but that's been our way, what we established. We have to let them decide what's their way. Are they going to choose the same way? Catechism we did when our kids were, I feel like we started it when Ryan was in about fifth grade. She's our oldest, which means Presley would have been in kindergarten. So they were pretty young when we started that.
We had a three-phase catechism that would grow as you grew. So like started off with a lot of memorization, and then later on you would understand all the scriptures, memorize the scriptures that went along with what you recited earlier. And then after that, you would have written examples of how you applied that scripture. We did none of those last two phases.
We did phase one.
Phase one was awesome.
We had a whole plan. We'll share the plan with you, and hopefully you guys can do better than we did.
That's right. So the part of the evolution is that we just drop things. So it was a game night. We did game nights, and that has...
We called it family night.
Well, yeah, we did.
Yeah,
actually.
We did. We called it family night when our kids were little, and... Do you guys remember the show? What was the minute to win it? Minute to win it. And it was like what you could do in a minute or whatever, stack apples, or we did all of those games. We would just Google all those games and do that with kids. But I would say, had I known about family, I mean, had I known about that idea, I absolutely would have done it. I think your third grader has a lot to say about what's happening in the house and I don't get enough time in the bathroom, and this kid always... I mean, it just gives this space for kids to be able to express things. I would have done it when our kids were little.
Do the games, too.
Yeah, and do the games, too. Yes.
Yeah, and the other thing, again, back to the consistency piece of things. So, like, I don't really think it matters what you're doing. Like, we say what's working, what's not working. But sometimes our like, family meeting has... like completely gone off track because the kid says, I don't feel loved. Like that'll derail your like what's working, what's not working. When someone says what's not working is I don't feel loved. Okay. Let's talk about that one. Right? But it's about the space and it's about the consistency and being in a place where like there's an open environment to have conversation, I think. So I don't know that you need to take away the idea of like, let's do these three questions, but more importantly, like
set aside
the time mm-hmm. and do it consistently. Mm-hmm. So
you have to say the question.
Oh, thanks. So the question is like, I forgot the earlier question, but this question is, how do we involve our kids as individuals? Because so much of this has seemed focused around,
family,
and then this part B is like, what do you do about kids that are resistant and don't want to participate? And so, like, we try to do very specific things with individuals. So, Like for years and years, it's been I've taken a kid to breakfast every week. So like on Sunday mornings or Saturday mornings, I would pick a kid and take and rotate through, and I would have breakfast with that kid. We also like I never go somewhere by myself. So if I'm going to the grocery store, I have a kid with me. Anytime I'm doing anything. Like it came really, Kaylin taught me that because we would go to like Costco and Sam's as a date, she called it. So I figured out after a while that like the spending time sometimes meant just doing life together. Mm-hmm. And so we're that's just a big part of it. I think who we are is like, I just don't go anywhere alone.
Yeah. And we were really intentional about, I used to work for a company in San Diego. And so I had to fly to San Diego every other week. And so every year, and I worked for them for a while, would take each kid one time. So, and looking for things like that. And then when I didn't work for that company, we did other trips. And I want to mention this really quickly, just speaking of individual, we decided that we were going to do a weekend away with each of our kids at a particular age to do conversations about physical changes and emotional changes and socially what was going to happen. And so we did that. I did the three girls and Ty did that with Micah. And I think that was around fifth or sixth grade that we did with all of our kids. And I read a bunch of books and then just kind of took the kind of the nuggets out of the different books and kind of wrote up, here are the things that I want to make sure we communicate with our kids. And I'll just say that I did it with our firstborn. And as a teenager, I was a terrible teenager and really hated my parents and hated the authority and kind of hated the family identity piece. So we'll get to the resistant kid, of which I was one. And so when I took Ryan away that weekend, I really wanted to normalize for her, her not liking us or not liking me. And so I kind of, was doing the like, hey, so, the relationships with friends become more significant as you get a little bit older, and what they think becomes a lot more valuable than what your parents think. And, you may hate me at different times and, and we went through the whole weekend and this was, and that's okay. That's going to happen. But I think I did present it very much in a like, this is going to happen to you. And so, and we did, the whole weekend with all the information. But what Ryan left from that weekend is, I'm going to hate my parents when I'm a teenager. And I don't want to hate my parents. And she was traumatized. Truly traumatized. So, I think her next birthday was, her 12th or her 13th birthday. And, it was, I can't be a teenager. And I didn't know why all this anxiety, and it wasn't until we really got to the bottom of it that I had basically told her that she was going to hate me when she was a teenager. And she didn't want that. And so I restructured what I did with the next two girls. But, yeah.
So when it comes to family meetings and some of these activities, we don't really give a choice. We just say, it's family meeting. You come, you sit.
And we have kids that will sit there silent through the whole thing. Out of a, I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, it's been...
That doesn't happen that often, but...
No, but we definitely have, chaos that breaks out in family meetings and kind of pseudo fights and just all kinds of things. You would think this would all be lovely and work great, and sometimes it does. But a lot of times it kind of gets just as crazy as our family.
That just reminded me one other thing I think that was on our list that we didn't talk about. When my kids were really little, my parents came to visit and my mom observed how we were doing dinner. And I had little kids at the time, but we would put them up at kind of the bar in the kitchen. We had stools and dinner was kind of a serving this kid and, oh, let me get this food and you need some more milk. And so Ty and I kind of stood and ate in the kitchen while we did all these things. And my mom very graciously, at the end of that weekend said, hey, I really think you should start to establish that you sit around a table together every night at dinner. And I'm so grateful because they were really little and we started doing that. And we sit around our table, I would say at least 5 nights a week. And what made me think of this is the resistance. We sat around the table tonight and I had one who was like, I'm not eating. I have so much homework. And I was like, come sit at the table, you know, and she sat at the table while we ate and she didn't eat and, you know, but we just say, this is what we do. This is, and they still sit. And then she, of course, engaged in the conversation after, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, but.
Hello.
Hello.
We're the Rileys.
I'm Bree.
I'm Justin. We're the Rileys. So Brian, asked us to kind of talk through something that I guess he's observed in our family, which is just, I guess, a rhythm of bringing our kids along, which I think was just sort of a natural thing for us. I when he first mentioned it, I was kind of like, well, is that a thing? Like, I mean, yes, we bring, yes, I think it's against the law to leave them, so I think we have to bring them along. But then when we sat to, Brady and I sat down to kind of talk through, like, okay, yes, maybe it is a little bit unique that we, maybe to the extent that we include our kids and bring them along through all the different facets and aspects of life, and circumstances and conversations, et cetera. And so when we sat to kind of think about what shapes this in us, I think there were a few things that stood out. And so while we do have a few practicals that we're going to talk through, I think for us it had to start with, okay, fundamentally, what is it that shaped this in us as individuals and kind of shapes essentially our identity as a family? So the first thing really stemmed from before we were even married, we were still dating. And I think we definitely had some pretty good counsel around us in terms of we've had some friends that we've had that have been friends with for a long time, well before we were married, and even our pastor at the time who did our premarital counseling. I think that the combination of relationships around us forced us to kind of think about and talk about being on the same page in terms of, look, if we're going to do this, meaning we're going to get married and do this whole life thing together, we're gonna do this as a team, and not to say that, not necessarily from an egalitarian perspective, but from a perspective of, man, like, I'm not gonna choose another teammate ever. Like, this is gonna be us, and we're gonna do this. And I think the things that kind of came with that, and maybe even shaped that, and then have grown over time, are that. Well, frankly, Brady reads all the books and lets me read the things she underlines, which is like super efficient.
Go through everything in this color highlighter you need to read.
Squiggly lines mean one thing, like shapes me. It's amazing. But it didn't take me long to figure out that Brady was way smarter than me, and figure out that she's like, I'm marrying a super competent person if she'll have me. And so we went into that, and I said, look, I know a couple of things. I know that that she's never – I mean, I just went into it with a confidence of she's not going to let me down, and even if she does, like, it won't be long. You know, it won't be much. And more than that, our pastor at the time basically said to us independently, like – if you're committed to Jesus and you can be committed to one another, like, this marriage thing might work for you, essentially. And so I think out of that, even I was able to see in her and commit to Brady to say, like, I'm not, like, whatever comes, like, I'm not going to give up. Like, I'm going to fight, like, to be the best teammate possible. And I felt like that was a strong commitment from her to me as well. And so I set out, one of the objectives that I set out and we set out together to do was to really, to be one another's champion, to say, like, I'm going to be your biggest fan. I'm going to be your biggest supporter. I'm going to look at not just who you are today, who is really an amazing thing, is an amazing person, but I'm also going to look at, like, who is Jesus shaping you to be, and how do I be a part of getting you there? Like, how do I participate in as your biggest champion, as your biggest supporter? How do I participate in pointing you to Jesus and getting you there?
Yeah, so that was never necessarily a, like, one of those things like, oh, if you just believe it, then those things will happen. But it was very much rooted in, like, this is who I know God is calling you to. And we're really sensitive to seeking the Holy Spirit and to talking through things with other people. So, like, we're going to champion one another, and I wouldn't say take risk, but just definitely constantly be saying, like, it's okay. Like, we'll get through this. We'll try this. Let's do this. Like, if we fail, then we just keep going as well. So it wasn't in ignorance, and it wasn't in like a, we have the confidence in ourselves to make this choice, but it still was very much rooted in, like, even if we fail, like, that's okay, because we'll still learn from it, and then we'll try something next time, and that sort of attitude.
Equal sign, we've taken some risks. and some have worked really great, and some didn't work out very well. But through, like, regard, so point, I guess just an example, we're moving very, like, we close on our current house next Monday. We close on the new house on Tuesday, the new house. And there's nothing wrong with our current home. In fact, I just finished a kitchen remodel. It's beautiful. It's a lovely place. And, like, we're bringing the kids along on this crazy adventure too. So the new house is, like, it sits on an acre of land, but it's a 1963 ranch that's still stuck in 1963, and will be months of, like, chaotic renovation situation. And yet, like, we looked at each other and said, like, this is going to be, it will be hard to leave the house that we're in, but this is going to be an incredible adventure with our kids.
So, okay, but to preface that, one of the things that, like, yes, those are examples, but we had a friend who, when we lived in Scotland, she had little kiddos, and we were walking to church one morning in a torrential downpour and sopping wet, and, like, her kiddos were in the little stroller and crying and stuff, and she's like,
it was freezing.
Kiddos, this is character development. And we remember very distinctly at that point in time, like, we need to intentionally seek out opportunities to develop character in our kiddos, because, yes, life will very much bring those opportunities that will happen no matter what, but we also have to be really intentional in fostering that. And so, like, things like this, we approached kind of as a, like, yes, like, can we get the loan? And yes, can this, like, logistically work out? Like, we're not going to make an unwise choice, but we're also going to go into it saying, like, this is an opportunity to develop all of our character. So again, it's not just like, oh, this is a chance to foster these things in our children. As we go through all of the things of, like, living in cramped space, dealing with the financial stuff, like, those things that come up, we're saying we're actually committed to doing this as a family for the fruit that it will produce, and through the things that are going to be exposed in us that we will have to face, that we would not face if we just stayed very comfortable doing our day-to-day things that we can just do. So that's part of the reason why we bring our kiddos along, is, like, in Justin and I's, like, kind of, okay, like, I trust you and you trust me and we trust Jesus and we're going to just, like, keep going. It's a continual desire in the two of us outside of even our children to, like, I don't want to stay who I am. Like, I want God to expose things in me and change things in me. And we pray about that and we talk about that and we bring them into that. But it's out of a, like, recognition that we just have to make decisions that will enable us to foster some of those things in them.
Yeah. One of the statements I wrote down is that I feel like Brady, and I think this is true for both of us, like, she has an unreasonable amount of confidence in Jesus and in me. And I think, you know, we've been able to look at each other and say, like, all right, I know that Jesus has something amazing, like, for us, whatever that is. And part of that is like who you are becoming. So, along with that, or kind of a tangential to that, is having rightly ordered loves. So another book that I never read, but I heard is really good, that Brady read, is about, is that what it's called?
You Are What You Love.
You Are What You Love. Yeah. Highly recommend it. I hear it's a great book. But it talks like about like your order.
Who's the person?
How are your loves ordered? And so like for us, and this is something that we've been really, really clear and descriptive with the boys about from day one, is like the boys know this, Brady, like we know this about each other. Like my first love is Jesus. Like my first responsibility is my relationship with God. My second relation, like second most relationship or most important relationship, is my relationship with Brady. So the boys know where they stand in terms of the pecking order in our family. Like, first, my attention is going to go to God. Second, my attention is going to go to your mom. And then I'm all ears for you, buddy. Like, so, and they know that. And we've been really clear about that. But it also, in saying that, we're expressing and demonstrating to the boys, look, if my relationship with God isn't my highest priority, then any other relationship beyond that will not be what it could and should be. It will not be as healthy as it should be. So, from a practical perspective, you know, Brian, last week, talking about, like, I think you borrowed Doug Wilson's phrase, like, we're weaponizing our children. Fantastic phrase. We're sharpening arrows, like, to shoot them into the world of, like, the kingdom. And so, as I think about what, like, this is a constant, like, you have to teach them everything, like, everything, like, from all the things, like, from when they're little to, like, how to relate to one another as like, teenagers, which still sounds somewhat terrifying. But we're preparing them for eternity. We're preparing them for parenting, for adulthood, for their own marriage. Like, so, and we tell them this. Like, we talk to them.
Well,
to the,
but not boys. Don't just stop there. Like, we're not just preparing them for when they're 22 or when they're parents. Like, we're preparing them for eternity. And so, yep. That's always been something that's set out as well. Like, we talk about heaven. We talk about, like, what that looks like. We answer questions about it a lot. And then in some of the practicals, because there's not a whole bunch of time, so one, feel free to ask questions as we're talking through. Yep. But also, we have been intentional in the things that we read to the boys, because they cast vision for that sort of thing. So it helps us foster that kind of conversation. Jensen regularly calls us up into bed and asks about, like, how is eternity forever, and how is it different than this world, and just different things. But because we've read Narnia to them over and over again, like, it's easy to help come up with, like, practical things. Like, okay, do you remember in this book? And so that's been one of the ways in which we've been able to help foster that, like, that perspective of eternity, is by spending time. Partly, it's me bringing them in on, like, things that I'm reading and things that you're reading. Like, you say that you don't read,
but you do read. I do sometimes.
But, like, recognizing that we are constantly, like, this is the book that I'm reading. Here's what God's teaching me. This is what's a challenge. And then almost, like, finding ways to, like, explain that to them at their level. Helping that be something that's cast is definitely, like, I'm not raising you so that when you're 18 and you go off, like, yes, that is really, really important. And then it's really important that one day you'll be a husband and one day you'll be a dad. Yep. But, like, you're actually, like, an eternal being. And we talk about that frequently.
Regularly, yeah. I think one of our bottom lines here is going to be, like, look, we've always had the perspective of playing the long game. In terms of, like, with our marriage, the intentionality that has shaped a lot of the decisions that we've made, a lot of how we operate our identity as a family, like, has been with the long range in mind of eternity, and then backing back from that. through different stages. So I guess approach life as like a constant classroom, because the kids, our kiddos, see us in all circumstances. What we don't like, if we do have a fight, is even kind of a strong word. We don't really fight much. But even if we have a disagreement, like, we're not retreating to like our bedroom or saying like, or putting the kids somewhere else. And like, I mean, if we're going to throw down, we're going to throw down with the kids so that they learn how that looks. Cause how else are they going to, you know, how else are they going to know that? And it's our responsibility to teach them and show and demonstrate that to them. So,
but very practically, like, I think there's that tension of, so when I run, I could run 3 miles every day and never become a better runner. So then I say, here's my training plan, and I'm going to actually increase mileage, and that's how you get stronger. And so we also definitely speak to the boys and put them into situations that might be a little bit over their head, or again, like when we read to them, like sometimes you're like, this is probably over your head, or like reading Narnia to them when they're even really little, or other books. With this, like, but you're learning this language, you're starting to then ask questions, and that actually will help you get stronger. So as a result, though, like, we have conversations with them that we are really candid about things. Like, so we have family prayer time every night, and we actually pray about things that aren't just like child related. But I had a friend who is still going through like a really horrible traumatic divorce, and they know actually almost all of the details, and not to a point where like I'm doing it to scare them, or like, it's because like I'm praying for this situation and they get brought into that, and then we have conversations around it. And so there's definitely an element of, with our relationship with God, with our relationship with one another, when we have arguments, they might see the argument, but then they might see then the other side of it, like us seeking forgiveness, yep, because Justin responds a particular way, or I respond a particular way. And because it happened in front of the boys, there's also a call to like, okay, now we're also repenting in front of them to one another. Like, you're right, I shouldn't have done this, or I said this incorrectly, and they're just over there coloring. So it's not this like, oh, come here, children, while we argue and listen in on what's happening.
Watch this.
But like, yeah, or we're in the midst of a conversation and like, I'm not saying that like Justin would never get teary-eyed, but like I could get teary-eyed, and you know, Waverly instantly like pops up like, okay, mom's over there crying. And there's no sense in like hiding it. Like, this is what's going on in me. And so let's bring you in on that. Let's pray about this. Yeah. And recognizing that like, they definitely don't understand things to the extent that we would, but we also really intentionally don't try to like, okay, this conversation needs to happen elsewhere.
Yeah. We don't censor much. I mean, I would say we do a pretty good job of maintaining like age appropriateness in terms of, you know, not giving too much detail. But as far as topics go, there's really nothing off the table. Like, if they're gonna ask about it, we're gonna shoot pretty straight with them about anything. And that's always been, I guess, a commitment that we've made to speak truth to them, speak truth over them, to pray with them. So. So our younger son Jensen is 6. Our older son Waverly is 8. So 6 and 8.
We also had a lot of confidence as well in them, like similar to Justin, I saying like, oh, we have confidence in one another. And really, it's similar to like going into marriage where you're like, I totally trust you, and you're like, what am I even committing to? Like, but you hold this out, like, but I know, like, this is the truth, and I'm going to walk in it. And we also really, just, like, we put that on the boys. So our confidence level in them is very, very high. So we take them all sorts of places. Like, we traveled with them really young. We bring them in on things. Like, Waverly used to ride his bike with me for a really long time when I was running. And you're like, oh, I can't, like, is this like healthy that he's, like, trekking with me? And, like, we definitely defaulted to, like, oh, well, we'll reel it in if we need to. We don't reel it in beforehand. So let's try it. Let's, at like little stage, we're like, let's just try these foods and see what happens. And if it doesn't take, then you like, don't give it to them for the next month. And then you try again. But there's a constant, like, let's just bring them along. And then we'll respond and say, oh, that doesn't work. Or we should tweak that next time. We maybe try to do that. But for the most part, we're constantly saying like, I think that they're capable. I think that they can get this concept. I think that they you know, and if they don't, then we'll learn from the situation of them not being able to do it quite yet. And
so we set the bar high, not from a this is unachievable perspective, or and I think we've been really, really intentional in saying, like, hey, your identity is not based on whether you achieve or fail. Like, that's not it at all. But we've said, like, hey, we're gonna shoot for this. Like, we're gonna have really ambitious goals for ourselves and for you as kids, as our kiddos. And yeah, so we do. We've taken them everywhere.
Yeah, but that's also, I feel like it ties into even what like Riley and Katie were talking about. We definitely do have like our time where we feel like we're having those good connection points, and then that overflows onto the time with our kids to where we're not then struggling with, like we haven't connected and now we're going away for a weekend and really like it's going to be a huge, like the boy, like they're just going to be here and we're not going to get to chat. Like those things have already been done, whether it's early in the morning over coffee or late at night or on phone call, like all of those things, like that's kind of been a rhythm for just tonight. And so when the boys are there, we're like, yeah, but this is actually great that they're here. Like I want them to be a part of these things. Yeah. And so those other habits that we have help foster that. But I do want to say one of the things, like on the side of championing one another and bringing the boys along, part of that is like we both bring the boys along in all things. And that is a reflection though of Justin and I being a team. So for example, like we're getting ready for Advent and I put together a, like, here's what we do every single day during the season of Advent. But I take that and I make sure that Justin knows exactly what's going on, because like there's going to be mornings that I'm not around or I'm not doing something. And it's like, Justin just knows like, okay, this morning, this is the, like, this is the habit or this is the thing. But I've also taken the time to like help prepare him for that. So we don't live, I guess all of us to say, like a lot of the things that we do isn't, oh, these fit into Justin's category as the dad and these things directly fit into mine. And we're really separate in those things. We try to find as many things as possible that we can constantly be doing. So skiing's an example. I'm taking lessons this December because I'm a horrible skier, but skiing's really important to our family because it's something that we can all do together, apparently. And like Waverly's so much better than me. And I'm like, I need lessons then because I got to be able to keep up. So nothing gets very few things get categorized as this is Justin's thing and this is my thing. Now he does have things that he loves to do with them. And I have things that I love to do with the boys. But as far as our teamwork, they're constantly like, you'll read to them and do this craft with them for Advent. It's like, oh, all the things are prepared. And so that's one of the ways too that we, Justin will prepare me for things that he has planned to do with the boys beforehand so that I'm then brought into it. So it's constantly not just Justin and I being a teamwork, but as a family, we're being a team and doing those sorts of things together.
Well, yeah, and just leveraging our strengths.
But making sure that it's also then maybe isn't your strength. And we joke about the whole book thing, but like that's not just a strength. I'm like, I'd love to constantly have like 20 books around. So then like I find ways to pass that along to Justin. And yet it's not keeping him out of that.
It's easy.
So. Anyways.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to. Jesus, thank you. So much for this time together tonight. I thank you for these families, God, for the just for calling us together and for using this time, using your word, using or by your spirit, God, changing and shaping us, God, to be more like you, God, to point our children to you, to point one another as husbands and wives to you. God, I pray that as we go from this place, you would help even these thoughts to just dig deep into how we shape our rhythms as families and as couples with our kiddos. And God, may we always be just pointing one another to you, that that our lives would be about your glory, even in the midst of the chaos of parenting. We give you thanks for our kiddos and just that you have entrusted them to us to raise them and point them to you. I pray that you would help us to do that well and wisely. Help us as we go from this place. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.